Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast series looking at the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XIII, The Rule of Caligula. With the death of the mostly absent ruler Tiberius, Rome embraces the new emperor Caligula, Tiberius's grandson and the son of their beloved hero Germanicus. And for somebody who was only in power for 4 years, Caligula has had a lasting impact on history, but not in the way that he may have liked. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Caligula came from a very elite background. In fact, even though other people might be more famous in terms of their lineage or prestige, you know, Augustus is emperor for a long time. Caligula, as we'll see, only ends up being emperor for 4 years. Caligula has the best family tree of any of the emperors in some ways. He is related back directly to Augustus, and he's related back directly to Livia. So like Tiberius, he's a Julio-Claudian. In other words, he has family on the Julian side, the Augustan side, and he has family on Livia's side, but he has it in a very direct way. He is the son of Germanicus, Livia's grandson, and Germanicus's wife is Agrippina, who is Augustus's granddaughter.
What is the significance of his name? Because his name isn't Caligula.
Caligula's a nickname. The Romans liked to give children nicknames, partly because they had very boring first names, and all three of their names are just taken from their fathers quite often, although that varies in the imperial family because there are so many people to honour. But his name is Gaius, which is of course a Julian family name. It was Julius Caesar's first name. And he's only called Caligula because of the nickname he was given when he is, as a very small child, taken on campaign with his father, Germanicus. And this is one of the things that is sort of seen as great about Germanicus, that he takes his family along with him, and his wife goes with him because she wants to be with him. Agrippina is, you know, the really good Roman wife. And so the little children are there, and the soldiers play with him and sort of knock about with him, and they make him little sandals, little soldiers' boots, which are called caliga. And so he gets the name Caligula from wearing these little boots. So his name means little boots, which sounds amazingly cute. And he's going to turn out to be a very cruel emperor, so it's very inappropriate.
They're emperor bootikins.
Yes.
I think it's quite clear, though, that when he grew up, when he became the emperor, he would never call himself Emperor Caligula.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things to say about that. One thing is that Suetonius, who is by far our best source for this reign, always calls him Gaius. So the Romans thought of him as Gaius. But I think somewhere along the historical tradition, the problem of there being so many Gaiuses in that family has led to a kind of simplification, that he's the Gaius who's Caligula. For example, we have talked in a previous podcast about the Gaius who is Augustus's grandson, who was meant to succeed him but didn't live long enough. Caligula is Augustus's great-grandson, so it all becomes very confusing.
So it's a point of differentiation.
It is, by and large.
Okay, so he was away with the military along with his father and his family. What else do we know about his youth?
Well, we know that there was a lot of moving around, and we know that when Tiberius is in charge, it starts to become quite disrupted, and he's in some danger because his family falls out of favour with Tiberius. All right, so there are rumours about what happens to Germanicus. Germanicus dies of some kind of illness while he's out in Syria, but there were rumours that he was poisoned at the behest of Tiberius, and somebody's actually put on trial for it, a man called Piso. And his mother is exiled, Agrippina's sent off, and you know, she doesn't come back. Two of his brothers are sent into exile, they're murdered, and he's the only remaining male, he's the third brother. And so he might quite legitimately, as a child, as a teenager, think that he's going to be next. So it must have been a frightened childhood that he experienced.
And very traumatic to suddenly, you know, lose all your family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to not have stability in any way. So the moving around when he's a child, at least his family was there with him. But by the time he's in his mid-teens, he's sort of on his own. And he ends up being sent to Tiberius on Capri in his mid to late teens.
Is that with the intention to do some sort of grooming for the future emperor to teach him some of the tricks of the trade or the swimming pool escapades or something like that?
Well, possibly. We can only speculate about the intention, but certainly Suetonius says that that's the effect, that he's kind of warped by this contact with Tiberius, by being, as you say, groomed by him at this very impressionable age. And the Romans in particular think of children at that age as being very much in the transition, as I guess we still do, between childhood and adulthood. But it's a very vulnerable time. So once you become an adult, you're kind of protected by being a man. But just at that point before it, you really need protection. And he hasn't got that. He's been left to this emperor who's becoming increasingly erratic, who indulges these very weird and deviant practices. And that's his upbringing.
So before Tiberius dies, he makes his grandson Gemellus and Caligula joint heirs. How does this situation resolve itself?
Well, very badly for Gemellus, because Gemellus is younger. And Caligula, when he named as the heir of Tiberius and Tiberius dies, he annuls everything that Tiberius has done. Now, this is really popular because Tiberius is hated by the Romans at this point, particularly elite Romans. So every time Caligula says, oh, I'm going to overturn that, I'm going to let people come home from exile, and I'm going to annul his will, they love it. It's great. Do the opposite of Tiberius. But one of the effects of this is to say, he's not joint heir with me. So he can kind of get away with just quietly disinheriting Gemellus. And in fact, Suetonius tells us that Gemellus is very quickly got rid of. He's accused of treason under very spurious circumstances. Caligula says that he's been trying to take an antidote, which proves that he suspects Caligula's trying to poison him, which is like accusing Caligula, when in fact he was just taking medicine because he was sick with a cough. So Gemellus, he's executed because of this.
I think you're worried that I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you for that. That seems a bit counterintuitive. With Caligula now emperor, what do the people of Rome think of that? Because this is the love son of Germanicus, isn't it?
Well, Germanicus had very clearly been the golden boy. I think we've talked before about he's sort of everybody's perfect emperor because he never got to be emperor and disprove it. Of course, he's also Augustus's grandson. And he's been adopted, as it were, by Tiberius, but he just kind of wipes that fact out and stresses the connection with Augustus and the connection with both his parents. So he has his mother's remains brought back, even though it's a very stormy sea, he has to go out to the island, so to show his piety. And all of this works really well with the Roman public because they loved Caligula's parents, and he's now seen as being very dutiful towards them.
So his mother's remains were put in Augustus's tomb, weren't they?
This is something that's important ceremonially for Caligula to get his relatives and put them in the mausoleum of Augustus. And you could read it very cynically as not being about this duty to his family at all, but being about something that he can make mileage out of by saying to people, I've got this connection to Augustus. I'm Augustus's grandson. Look, I'm doing the right thing by Augustus's family. And as I say, he's also overturning everything that Tiberius did. So you've also got writers whose works were torn out of public libraries, and Caligula says they can go back in. You've got people who are in exile who get brought back. You've got treason trials that Caligula says that's going to end. There's going to be no more of that. So everything you can think of that's bad that Tiberius did, Caligula just tears it up. And he's amazingly popular at the beginning. People love him and they kind of forget about the fact that he got rid of Gemellus because everything else is so brilliant. He's really getting a lot of praise because he's not Tiberius.
So how did he go about ruling himself? Because I understand he had issues with finances.
He did, and he really shouldn't have done because the finances weren't in a particularly bad state at that point, but he's very extravagant. At the beginning, he's very lavish with what he gives to the public. So he puts on gladiatorial shows for them and, you know, circus races, and he throws money directly at them, coinage with his head on it. He's got all of these propaganda tools working for him. And of course, Tiberius hadn't done that. He hadn't even been in Rome, so he's not throwing games for the people. But being this lavish means that there's going to be a deficit and he's going to have to start making money somehow. So you do unpopular things like imposing more taxes. Also things that are a combination of raising money but doing it in a way that is not acceptable to the Romans. So nobody likes taxes, but, you know, that's a part of life. But Caligula starts doing it in ways that combine money raising with his own kind of deviance. So there's lots of it that's connected with prostitution, for example. So he's supposed to have opened up a brothel in the Palatine Hill, home of the emperors, in the very palace itself. And it wasn't a brothel that was only worked by prostitutes. He actually brought in freeborn and highborn women to work that brothel. So there you've got this combination of being a bad money manager, needing to find a way to fill the coffers, and also being someone who's not going to abide by the standards of Roman society.
Bit of salt in the wound there.
Exactly.
So all of this so far seems to be quite positive and almost a run-of-the-mill, you know, semi-competent emperor. Sure, his finances mightn't be up to scratch, but he's at least treating the people better than Tiberius was. So what's the turning point in this?
There is a definite turning point in Caligula's reign, and it actually seems to have happened about halfway through. Now, some people think that it's down to an illness that he had very early in his reign in 37, where he nearly died. But the real madness, cruelty, however you want to describe it, starts a couple of years later, so it's quite hard to make the timelines work there. We do see, though, in the historians and the biographers, this impression that Caligula was okay for a while, however long that while was, which, as I say, is unclear. So, for example, Suetonius doesn't always work chronologically, but about a third of the way through, he says, "So much for the emperor, now the monster." Mm. And the rest of the biography is just a list of terrible things he did, cruel, mad, out of hand. You know, he's unpredictable. There's numerous deaths. This is only a 4-year reign, but there are huge numbers of victims here. So there is very definitely that change from what could be a reasonable emperor to somebody who's utterly unreasonable. Now, I wonder whether there isn't something to the fact that there's so much hope that is put on the shoulders of Caligula as the great-grandson of Augustus, as the son of Germanicus, that he's going to be this new Augustus. There's going to be this new golden age. There is a sense that people hoped for that. And what they got instead was the exact opposite. They got tyranny, they got terror, they got ultimate cruelty. Certainly, the historical sources are consistent in saying that it wasn't too bad for a little while, but it turned fairly early.
How much do we know about the illness that he had?
We know very little, and people have attempted to diagnose it as some kind of illness that might have affected his brain. But the description that we've got in Roman texts is really not very helpful. So I'm not sure that we can attribute it to that. And in any case, the dates don't add up very conveniently for us.
Yeah.
So that's quite hard to do. And I think that perhaps a more persuasive line is to say that it might have been a combination of things. Yes, maybe he got ill and that affected his view on life. He nearly died. So maybe when you're at that edge, when you think anything could happen, you just do anything you want. Plus, of course, he was in a position where he could do anything he wanted. He was the supreme ruler at Rome and nobody was going to challenge him. And that's what he seems to have made the most of. So related to that illness, for example, there are stories of two people who prayed very hard that he should be saved. And one of them said, "I'll go and act as a gladiator if Caligula lives." And the other one says, "You can take my life instead of Caligula's. You know, let me die just so Caligula can live." And when he survives, Caligula holds them both to that. So he makes the guy who promised to be a gladiator go into the arena. And he's an elite senator, so he shouldn't do that. And he makes him keep fighting until he wins. And the other guy who promised his life in exchange for Caligula's, he says, "Well, you've got to give that to the gods now." He makes him kill himself.
Mm.
So that's pretty extreme.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. You can find this podcast on both SoundCloud and iTunes, where you can download it, subscribe, leave a review, and please share it with your friends. You can follow both Rhiannon and myself on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. You can also find Emperors of Rome on Facebook, so please come and join in the conversation. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, We descend into the chaos that is the madness of Caligula. Until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.